Blog Talk Radio. we on now?
Frank at one.
And we're live. 15 minutes late, but we're live. Yes, it's Tuesday, December 14th, 2010. It's Tuesday. This live from Jack Room, 1331 Street, in the heart of our nation's capital.
Risen from the dead.
Yeah, we're going to have a little talk with Blog Talk Radio here. Because this is going to stop. We have important people that want to talk to us, such as our normal Tuesday roundtable. I'm J.T. Russell. I'm your moderator of Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Backroom. With me, as always, every Tuesday, enjoying the really fantastic campfire wings here at Shelley's Backroom. He is the former 8-term member of Congress from the beautiful 2nd Congressional District of Washington State, Congressman Al Swift. Al, thanks for joining us as always.
Hello, I'm glad we finally made it.
Yes, we did. And joining me as always, now then, I'm going to get this straight because I'm going to read this straight off of Bob Hines. The Honorable Bob Hines is with us today. I have been screwing up Bob's bio. I've had him doing everything from the ambassador to Ghana to being the vice president-elect under Gerald Ford. Bob Hines is the former minority counsel of the House Rules Committee. He is a legislative aide for Republican Gerald R. Ford, future President Gerald R. Ford. He is also a former vice president of government affairs at NBC and currently a principal at Honorable Bob Swift. When he says I'm going to get this right. Honorable Bob Hines, you're with us. Thank you very much, Bob. Thanks for joining us.
You see, when the whole system goes down,
I am completely now sidetracked. Normally, if you're listening to us, for the 8 or 9 people that are actually listening to us live right now, thank you for joining us. But we're also 15 minutes. Right now, we should be going to our first break after during the first. What we're going to call the as always is Honorable International Affairs Pundit, our glad to be on the air. My God. And as always, our wing battle joins Florida by way of Ohio and points east, west, south, whichever. The bodyguard. Several special guests here with us. We have Ray and Chandler from the Ray and Chandler Radio Show. They've been kind enough to join us. Ray and Chandler, thank you for coming today. Thank you for joining us for Backroom Politics. We have Perry Blasting, former member of the Office of Congressional Affairs at Department of Homeland Security, now just unemployed college student working on an American university. Perry Blasting, who will more than likely be joining us from time to time in the future. Perry is going to be working the whole basis of our radio show, the First Congress Society. Perry, for his capstone, will study how to set up a grassroots political effort, i.e., the First Congress Society, and he's going to do a report on it, and hopefully your professor won't laugh you out of the classroom.
Let me know where you're
going. And we also, Rhea, you'd like to introduce your father as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah, folks, my father's here joining us today. My father is an esteemed lobbyist on Capitol Hill. He is actually a defense procurement specialty analyst. His mother, Chris Lindner, is the people to explain why the toilet seats in the Pentagon actually cost the taxpayer $800. Go Dad.
Well,
I want to meet that
fella. Yeah. We got a whole today, and one of the things to start off with is Washington has experienced another great, great loss in the political community, particularly, Ralph, in your neck of the woods, in the international affairs, the diplomatic corps. The Honorable Richard Holbrooke passed away yesterday at 69. Richard Holbrooke was truly a great, from the Democratic side particularly, a great, great diplomat, a great ambassador, a great voice for the U.S. He's definitely going to be missed. I saw it with you, is how does this affect international affairs? I mean, the international community, we have a Democratic president. Word on the street was that Clinton not decided to continue as Secretary of State. He was not the number one person on the short list, at least top three, because of Secretary of State. Now, the international community is going to be reeling from this.
Absolutely. I think, as you said, the diplomatic community has lost a true president in Ambassador Holbrooke. He's going to be sorely missed. He did a fabulous job in bringing it close to the war in former Yugoslavia. Very the Obama administration has some very good up and coming statesmen.
Democrat on the Hill, we you know, during your the end years of your tenure as a member of Congress, was very instrumental in a lot of foreign policy during your time. More importantly, was the situation in Yugoslavia and Kosovo. Do you recall those days and the influence he had, not only in international affairs, but in the Democratic Party as a whole?
I do recall the days, obviously. And I'm not sure exactly what his impact on the Democratic Party as a whole, because I'm not never been quite sure what the parameters of the Democratic Party are. But he was enormously well-respected, and I think that probably he could have served Republican presidents as well. Obviously, a president is going to want to have somebody that's philosophically close to him, aligned to him. And Holbrooke was a little more liberal than your average Republican president. But he was a professional statesman, and I think he would have done that, just as there are some Republicans in foreign policy who would do the job for whomever because they're professional.
Bob, I don't know if you have any recollection of dealing with Ambassador Holbrooke during your time here in Washington. I know that during your time in the House, he had a tremendous amount of influence going back to even LBJ and the Kennedy years. How much of an impact does this have internally as far as how the Democrats and even Republicans look at how international affairs, he was an elder statesman?
Anytime you lose someone who has much breadth of experience, who knows so much of the leadership of the nations around the world with which we have continuing obligations and relationships which we have to keep fresh and alive, when you lose someone with his experience, we all suffer.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to the Holbrooke family. He is definitely going to be a figure here in Washington that's going to be truly missed. I don't think we'll ever see another true diplomat in the way that we saw Ambassador Holbrooke. Ralph, you agree with that?
I agree. I think the Dayton Peace Accords were probably his finest hour because they were on the verge of having the whole thing blow up, and he forced the other side to stay at the table and was not going to leave until they agreed to compromise.
You know, one of the truly remarkable things I heard in today's news coverage of Ambassador Holbrooke was the fact that one of his last words, if not his last words, were "end the war in Afghanistan." He's definitely been on board. He's definitely been advising the Obama administration on how to gradually back out of that effort. But does the loss of Ambassador Holbrooke really put that effort on hold. Does his loss make the Democratic administration push forward with keeping that idea moving forward?
Well, he was working on a paper that a speech that he was going to hand in on Thursday. So I assume they will hand in his rough draft on Thursday, and we'll know more about what his final thoughts were.
Have they decided they're going to release the paper?
I do not know. I just know that there was a paper that he was to turn in. There was his report that he was to turn in on Thursday. So I'm assuming he's not like I am and would wait till Wednesday night to write it. So I'm assuming that we will get some sort of rough draft or some sort of final thoughts that he's got. The other question is, why didn't we, you know, he had surgeon on?
He was at the Ronald Reagan Trauma Center at GW.
Where?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, you know, he was in the finest care. I don't really get into the head of Ambassador Holbrooke, but I think more importantly, one of the things that we have to look at is, you know, Ambassador Holbrooke was the voice for many Democratic administrations international. He was a voice in foreign policy. I know he's given we're able to create another true diplomat.
That's a good question.
I mean, nobody's going to be able to fill a shoe. Ambassador Holbrooke, I mean, ask a question, you know, is there somebody who could step up? One of the names we heard out of President Jimmy Carter would be the next Holbrooke. Would President Carter be...
No.
Would,
I don't like Carter. Carter has burned too many bridges with the way he's tried to handle the situation
Carter
in the Middle East.
Him and his crime blue eyes.
Who has a great deal of credibility and who is also first and worked diligently over many years, and we don't have someone who is well recognized. We may have someone who is as smart and as talented, but that person does not have the relationships that Holbrooke has.
Right.
Even as a rabid Republican, I liked Holbrooke and stood behind him with his decisions and his peacemaking skills were phenomenal and beyond reproach. So
his talent for getting these people to the table, he knows how to work them.
Exactly.
All that is gone. He was beyond reproach.
He must have been a great poker player. But I'm very interested to see on Thursday if what we get released from this so-called report, if his final words were, you know, in the war in Afghanistan. I'm very interested to see what his thoughts were and what Petraeus' thoughts are after he reads the paper.
Do we know to what extent he and General Petraeus were aligned in their thoughts?
We don't know. I mean, obviously that decision is going to come from the administration. That's going to come from Secretary Gates. That's going to come from the White House, ultimately, and the Commander-in-Chief. However, with Ambassador Holbrooke's early demise, I argue, that whole discussion is going to have to be reevaluated. If for no other reason that the true sage foreign affairs pundit that this country had is now gone, they're literally going to have to take a step back and look at all the data and see and try and what, you know, what, how they can get into his head, truly see what he saw as being the reasoning behind that.
He had to have someone on deck.
He's very close to that.
right positions and has a lot of strong kind of content.
Right. I mean, does Newman have to take a look at his thoughts and looking at how Trump portrays, how President Obama, I mean, do they really see what he saw to truly end the war in Afghanistan, or do they just keep? Wow, if there's anybody still listening out there, we thank you for really being patient. For those of you who might be listening at Blog Talk Radio headquarters, we have to talk. But for those of you guys who stayed with us, this is JT Russell, your moderator, and this is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Backroom here in Washington, D.C. It's a full house. It's a lively house today at Shelley's. But joining me as always every Tuesday, Al Swift, Bob Hines, Ralph Winnie is joining us as well, bodyguard, and we've got visitors here in the house, but we wanted to get back to a little bit of what we were talking about earlier, and that was the passing of Ambassador Richard Holbrooke. Richard Holbrooke obviously is somebody that was well-respected in the international community. Harry, you wanted to add something about Richard Holbrooke to close that up?
Yeah, I think that, you know, two of the questions that we have brought up are, one, how do we move forward to person, and this morning at 11 o'clock was scheduled monthly meeting on a situation with all the advisors, and certainly Holbrooke the one name missing in that room. I have to imagine that the new name, the shortlist, started in that meeting, but I think that we, you know, that was the first question after the task was that who's going to be the next one to meet, and I think in a few days we'll start to hear back.
Okay.
Let me say something, and if a Republican said this, then I'm sure as a Democrat I would think they were being crass. But the truth is, no one is beyond replacement in time. Holbrooke was as good as we've said he is, and he is going to leave a hole in a short time. But people come and go on the international. Abba Ibn was a great diplomat in the state of Israel, and he passed his prime. We will find people that will maybe not be the same as Holbrooke, but will have a set of talents that may be equal to his, and we will forge ahead.
Now, what do you think of Madeleine Albright?
I have regard for Madeleine Albright. And I think somebody mentioned Jimmy Carter, and I put that in the same category as Bill Richardson or what's his name, who flies off and saves people all the time.
Jesse Jackson.
Madeleine Albright would have bring the heft, certainly. One of the things we said that we lose with Bulbrook is gravitas, and she would certainly bring considerable gravitas to it. She would be, just off the top of my head, she'd be my choice.
Bob, when we look at the international affairs community, we mentioned Madeleine Albright. Are there any Republicans that could possibly stand up? Colin Powell obviously has a lot of credibility in the international community, but I don't think his insertion into the international affairs realm, particularly under this administration, is going to be viable. Are there any Republicans that might step up and be a good voice and an advocate for the country?
Well, you've mentioned probably among Republicans the one person who has the most international recognition to shape. And I think we're going to see there are people who have background and knowledge and experience. What they probably don't have at this point is the relationships, the comfort level with the leadership of countries all around the world that Colbert had. So what we're going to lose, at least in the short term, may not be the quality of the talent, but it may be the lack of close relationships with a whole variety of presidents and foreign ministers around the world, and that takes time.
Not go ahead, Frank. Not to add on to the negativity of the passing of Holbrooke, but what's the consensus of the people here with the WikiLeaks debacle is going to compound our efforts to get someone. Okay, replacing him is going to be tough enough, let alone with this idiot WikiLeaks, who is evidently making bail.
Correct.
Okay. I'm just trying to get an idea of what everybody else thinks that it's going to be compound our problems. God knows. Clearly,
it compounds every problem we've got. Now, I am not convinced that there's not going to be some good coming out of this. One of the things that is getting reported regularly is that when you look inside U.S. diplomacy over time through the information coming out of WikiLeaks is we look pretty good. we look like we have been doing it the same. We've been crazy, but we generally have been saying we were doing publicly.
Look at someone like John Huntsman, the U.S. ambassador to China, fluent in Mandarin, has started to make the connections in Asia that are going to be so important as we move forward in the next millennium.
Yeah, there are clearly going to be people who are popularly known and that probably most of us don't know who are skilled professionals within the department.
The behind the scenes we aren't privy to, they already know.
Yeah, but the administration will know.
I'm hoping it's that person who actually put that Russian, ill-fated Russian word on the big red reset button. I want that person to represent us. How money's on that person?
Which? You lost one.
Remember when the Secretary of State, Clinton, had the big red reset button that she gave the president? It wasn't misspelled. It was a complete... I was a Russian interpreter. when the Berlin Wall came down. So I want the idiot who used completely the wrong word on the reset button of complete embarrassment to our diplomatic protocols. I want that person to represent us and to play Holbrook.
Why is that?
Why is that?
Because apparently that was the best that America could provide at the time. That's the best we got to go with. If that's the best example of our Russo relations, to have that person or someone manage that person that presented that gift,
I think
it's embarrassing.
I think you're right. Your problem is it clearly was not.
And the Russians are definitely playing the Obama administration for all they can get.
Oh, completely.
Well, here's another, not related, but did anyone notice that Walmart had a display with a sale item, a holiday Happy Ham for Hanukkah?
That person
needs to go.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Well, by the way, joining us, who just walked into the studio, is Bob, the proprietor of Shelley's Backroom.
Oh, excellent.
And the esteemable sponsor of our little function here every Tuesday. Bob, thank you for having us every Tuesday.
You see, Democrat blank, huh?
Well, as you can tell, Bob is also a Republican.
Leanne, IRS employee, what party are you?
Oh, we haven't talked about this before.
No, we have not. We might as well now. I mean,
I'm so outnumbered here. I am begging, hoping, pleading, at least be a liberal.
You know, the way I've answered that question before is if it was politically acceptable, I'd be independent. But I am a registered Democrat.
Well,
don't worry.
Wow.
We'll of you.
Wow.
You probably just lost your job, but I'll take it.
Let's move on real quick, because we're coming to the bottom of the hour, or the top of the hour rather. When we come back, I definitely want to talk about the big issue that popped up here recently. Within the past 24 hours, is the tax bill finally made it through the House and the Senate, and will probably go to the president's desk. So, what's that?
Everyone's talking about his veto.
Well, we're going to talk about that and some of the issues that are going to come as a result of that. But
he's the organizer. He'll speak and organize.
We're going to take a 5-minute break here. This is Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Backroom.
Really?
And we are live back at Backroom Politics here, live from Shelley's Backroom, 1331 F Street in beautiful and very cold Washington, D.C. It is ugly out there, kids. Joining us as always, Al Swift, Bob Hines, Ralph Winnie, Frank the Bodyguard, and numerous guests here in the Peanut Gallery contributing their thoughts and views of everything happening inside the Beltway, outside the Beltway politically. We have, as we do from time to time, I am not an expert in much of anything. I gave bad intel before, and it was that it vote on this bill here, a cloture test vote in the Senate, but has not yet gone to the House and ultimately not to the president's desk. However, with the passing of the test vote, it's apparent that the Democrats that have signed on with this approach are on board. They're on board with the president. They're on board with the initiative. I think it will stand in the Senate. Now, the question is, in a lame duck session of Congress with Speaker Pelosi still on the chair, how can the Democrats get it through the House, or Al, can they get it through the House?
I don't know. I think I think they'll get it through the House. And I think that it'll be with a minority of Democratic votes, but enough to pass. I think that there may be some votes there would be an effort to try and amend it in some regard. Bob suggested that they would try to amend the estate tax, which sounds reasonable to me.
Reject those amendments based upon the test vote and send it back.
Term solutions for dealing with the national debt. Why is that?
Did you hear Biden the other day? He started with his own office and he's cut across the board.
Right.
So it's a start.
But answer my question. Why are there no long term solutions to dealing with the national debt? I mean, that's the whole point of
having the tax bill. I think the answer is that both Mitch McConnell and the president had about all they could cram into a compromise. That was there, and adding that adds a huge load that I don't think they can carry. So that's the reason.
I think it opens a whole new problem, because once you start trying to reduce the deficit in this bill, you obviously look at the tax cut, the state tax cut, and both of those spend money in the short term, at least. And I don't think anybody is prepared at this point to do that. And if you're going to get the extension of the unemployment compensation bill,
right,
you're going to have to take the package the way it is. It's a compromise. I don't think anybody likes it. I think both parties would like to take half of it, but not the other half. The party can't do it unless they take
all. All right. Well, there's two questions that come up from just what we were talking about. Number one is the this has long been said, excuse me, as this has gone forward, this is a true now compromise on Republicans. But this does not float well with some of the more radical Democrats. And going against the head party.
Plays a rough game of politics, and if she wants to pass and on the president's desk, she wants to screw it up. I suspect she can do it.
But if she tries to screw it up, it makes the Democrats look like they're obstructionists.
You've noticed.
Well, that was the president's question. That even in the press conference last week, we talked about on our last show, said we don't understand at the White House why there would be radical opposition to this bill. This is
what if she will have the branches there.
I'm amazed that the Democrats, biggest complaint. And secondly, I can't believe they would step in the way for 6,600 Americans. I believe that's what we're talking about. Those people who would be affected by the estate tax. 6,600, it's a rounding error. And I can't believe they'll stand
away. Well, you know, the problem that we also have with the tax bill is it's got ramifications on trade. We've talked about this briefly before, Ralph, the implications on the tax bill, the extension of the unemployment benefits, the long-term effect that it will have on international trade, which, quite honestly, we can't afford to have an implication on our trade. We're already behind the eight ball on it. Does this really – is there enough argument to say, hey, we really have to revisit this from the Democratic standpoint?
Well, the problem is it's hard to do any type of long-term planning when this is going to expire in like 2 years. So that puts a wrench into how you're going to structure your business, your estate. And in terms of doing international business, they should be focusing on lowering the corporate tax rate to make America more – competitive with other countries.
But for members of both parties who don't like parts of this,
right?
For the Republicans, they think the Republicans gave too much, and the Democrats think the Democrats didn't get enough, and so forth and so on. I watched a television biography of Hubert Humphrey last night.
Wow.
And
you were up late.
and Hubert Humphrey and negotiated with Everett Dirksen and came to a compromise. What he had to give up, there were two parts in it. There was the public accommodation section, and there was a voting rights section. Whatever Dirksen's pound of flesh was, give up the voting rights section. And Humphrey did. Now, imagine, you're trying to help black people, and you take away the one thing every citizen has, his major weapon to defend himself. They came back and got it later. But they wouldn't have been able to come back and get it later if they had left it in and killed the whole damn thing. So people who say, well, we either didn't get enough or we gave too much, have got to keep in mind that you got to get something done.
You know, one of the things that everybody, I think, realizes after the election is we're going to have to work together, both parties. Now, neither party is in a position at this point with the new Congress is sworn in, neither party is going to be able to dictate to the other party. We're going to have compromises if we want to go forward, which means that every major piece of legislation is going to have the fingerprints of both parties on, or it won't get passed.
Exactly. And that's a very good question. This actually increases the deficit. Why didn't they do something about that? I frankly think both sides need some time to prepare their people for the kinds of votes they're going to have. These are going to be some tough, tough votes. And the Republicans aren't going to...
You're speaking of the new class coming in the 111th Congress.
And I don't think they're ready to deal with that. And I think both parties' leadership are going to need a lot of...
Wow.
Supreme Court justice that was making an interpretation of the Second Amendment.
Hold off on that one.
We'll
go
see
ahead.
If we can find you one, Brian.
Yeah.
I'll hold my breath.
So from the Second Amendment back to the compromise issue.
Right.
You know, the votes are going to be hard. And certainly when we have an incoming speaker coming out and saying that he doesn't think the President of the United States treats him with respect, his party's going to hear that, and compromise is just going to be infinitely difficult.
Didn't the president just say the other day that it's because of him that this all came about?
Because of him?
The voters came in and spoke. And I've said this in a couple of meetings. He had to do what he's doing now. He had to. Political suicide if he didn't. Al?
Well,
am I wrong on this?
You are right. But if you were explicated further, it's probably from the horse.
from
my perspective. Yes.
Well,
and Al, I agree with you. I think the X factor is going to be the effect that the Tea Party is going to have on these new freshman members of Congress. The key is, will Boehner be able to keep them in line? Do you think of that, Bob?
I think that to change somewhat significantly. Mr. Boehner is already coming back to the side of the committee. We have fewer members with three or four states.
Long over.
That's long over. There is, he is already saying he's going to cut the budgets of the members and of the committees.
Right.
It raises us maybe $25 to $30 million, saves us in the budget. It doesn't mean money. It's not a big deal. It's important to it.
Well, we got playing in the background. Get a party playing in the background. Break. Back to the top position that was in the past 20 hour working that house. We're going to talk about that from your perspective. Please back to the slide right now on Blog Talk Radio. From Sleep Back, we will be back in about 2 minutes.
Down, 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 down what old Lotto knows.
For me to order a Jack. Joe, can I get a Jack and water? We're on the air. Say hi, Joe.
Hi.
There we go. Thank you, Joe.
Now, according to the union, we got to pay her.
Yeah, of course we do. All right, you know, we one of the things we want to talk about, and now we seem to be solid technical ground. I'm not giving the calling number. If anybody is out there, please feel free to call. But number is 6477 in the Southern California metropolitan San Diego area. The number is 619-638-8477. Ben, we want to talk about the ruling ever, which has really started the debate. A really strong
something tells you that you have paper on, and that's when the ratings they did that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, the reality is that, I mean, you have to give credit to the Attorney General in Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli, who really made this a staple of his efforts after being sworn in, literally writing the brief as he was walking off the stage. And here, that being the case, number one, why not the attorney in the side all around for a lot of the Mexican hubris calls into question, how is it that nobody saw this
You and I and anybody can sit around and have a lot of our conversation about it. It doesn't mean diddly, because the whatever the courts decide and whatever the lawyers argue is what is ultimately going to happen. It'll be decided by the Supreme Court.
Right, Chandler?
Well, besides, I really do believe that they thought that they could campaign and sway the mind of the American people, and then we would all say, well, thank heavens you finally swooped down and you're helping us with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We now accept this. it's because their campaigning failed, and they're still scratching their asses wondering why their campaign failed and their commercials failed to sway all Americans over to this. So hubris is really the only thing I've got.
Okay. It's ironic because
their narrow point of law has never directly been adjudicated.
Commerce Clause?
I'm talking about the, in effect, how wide it is. But this particular item, making it a requirement that you must buy insurance or pay a penalty, has never been adjudicated before the Supreme Court.
So this brings up the question then. Does an organization like the Internet Commerce Commission ultimate jurisdiction of health care?
I wouldn't think
there,
so.
There isn't an Interstate Commerce Commission. That was abolished several years ago.
Not long.
I had a day on my facts.
The fact of the matter is, there is still pending in the district. There's been no decision by the, I think there are 20 or 21 states that have all joined the three states that have now made a decision in three states on this. The two states,
Virginia. In
Florida.
Ohio.
Two states have said in effect it's constitutional. It's two district courts said it's constitutional. One state, Virginia, said it is not. Now, the question is going to be, the next issue is going to be what happens with this big, big, humongous suit with many states involved. And at that point, I suspect that it is likely that what Governor Virginia, we don't go to the appellate court after this big decision. We go right to the Supreme Court. It makes no sense to go to the appellate court, go directly to the Supreme Court once the big case is decided, and I think that's still
taken care of very quickly, since in Virginia we only have one-term governors. So he's got to get this wrapped up before. And Lincoln wins it, the lieutenant governor, and he can continue the fight. But hey, this is running through the appellate courts, just taking, finally any time, it's not going to work.
Right.
I just have an insider comment to make. I have a design firm. Privilege is actually decorating the condo of the woman who is a lawyer who wrote the healthcare plan. And so, unbeknownst to her, she bothered not to Google me to find out who I am and what my viewpoint are. So I was asking her some questions. She said point blank to me that in the office, Nancy Pelosi made it very, very clear that this is my legacy. You do everything you can to pass because this is my legacy. And that was the motivating factor and the leadership tone in the office. Yeah.
Anything?
Yep.
Ralph, go ahead.
Question for Bob. In the two states that said that the health care bill is constitutional, was there any reference made to international law or decisions in other countries supporting health care? Because progressives or the liberals really like to quote that.
Not to my knowledge, I don't know enough to give you an answer. But I do know that two states said, in effect, it passes muster.
It's
not, so it has to go forward.
Is it, Bob, and in terms of being Bob and Ron, can you where the state has been able to affect the Supreme Court hearing? Has that happened before?
Yeah.
Active.
is being activated in the regulatory process slowly but surely. And when the states are involved, it's different than just if an individual is involved or just a company is involved. You've got the states that have to do regulations themselves, write regulations to pick up the government, the federals. So it makes good sense from the standpoint of the judicial system to go past the appellate court, go directly to the Supreme Court, because given the number of cases, it will go to the Supreme Court. At least four. We have three states, and now we have a number of states all together. When you have four decisions going, you know, that go different ways, it certainly would be appropriate for the Supreme Court to be the ultimate decider and make it now. I've heard all the arguments of different decisions.
Let me say one thing again. This is in the hands of the attorneys, and it's going to get decided by attorneys and courts. So we again can sit here and jaw all we want, but it doesn't make much difference. But let me add something new to this. Driving down here, I heard a newscast that said that the president had met with a group of governors. I don't know whether they were Democratic governors or all governors. And we're hearing about the concerns with the costs and what have you. And one Democratic governor said, couldn't there be a way to opt out, for states to be able to opt out? And he said, and they gave no details, that he gave her three ways in the current law that states can opt out. We don't know what those are at this point, but we ought to be getting more information as to whether those will in any way affect how the court case goes, or who is supporting what. That's all the information they had on the short newscast, so I don't know what those
are. Go ahead, Frank.
Who of the Supreme Court had recused himself? Was that related to recently? Someone had put the Supreme Court.
Well, they wouldn't have to recuse himself unless they decide to hear the case, but
I think what you're referring to is Elena Kagan gently made a comment that she will finally not having to recuse herself from every case that's come in because she argued on behalf of the Obama administration that she worked for them.
Right.
So I think it's a point of that weird time frame in between her leaving the administration, getting nominated, and confirmed when the healthcare case was going on, whether she could join in at that point when it does recuse her report.
Interesting. One of the questions that comes up is, the health care bill does deem it constitutional, which right now the current justice is needed to point what entity will support or right against in the dissent. One of the things that we look at, if the Supreme Court the states right now are already taxed beyond belief. They have no bandwidth to administer a universal health care program. That's just not going to be in the realm of possibility. But if the federal government doesn't have to enact this, can a state like embrace it, observe it, and have any of this?
I think there's remarks which are very cloudy now. If in fact the Supreme Court finds this legal, and it is so true that the legislation contains means by which states can opt out, then you could have it in, but not all states participating.
Wow.
I question whether any decision of the any decision going forward is going to leave states the ability to get out. What do you think, Ralph? I can't see that possible.
Because at any point they enact this legislation, they set up this huge enforcement capacity, this regulatory capacity of Republicans to opt out. They disband this entire regulatory, and not to mention the fact that this is going to crash, quote, tax unduly regulated, unduly fined, however you want to call it. This is going to just jam up the judicial process. Courts at the local level are going to get lawsuits like there's no tomorrow.
Every state will have to comply. If the Supreme Court were to say that it is unconstitutional because you're requiring people who have not done something to do something, if they do that, then you will see the structure. In effect, you will see the Congress, no matter who's in charge, struggling to figure out what to do next. And that would be a real problem because obviously there's going to be a continuing effort on part to structure the health care program. And there's going to be a continuing effort on the part of Republicans to make sure that whatever's done is as least offensive to the state.
Would it be similar to their section?
We're getting program, and if they change governors, governors want to go in and out. I mean, if a Republican governor wants to go out, and then a Democratic governor wants to go in, it's chaos. So one way or another,
that's an interesting question. Do I write off? Do I in fact use this as a tax? Can I write it off? Do they have to amend the tax law to say, hey, I write this off of my taxes when I file my report? I'm getting off the federal program. This creates a whole legislative quagmire as well.
I'm Carolina right now. I plan no funding penalty for Carolina.
They don't
have it. You have a different class of people.
They have free medical, free everything. And
they're now arguing state by state. In Virginia, according to the precedent, we're illegal citizens, illegal aliens here, are now winning in court the right to in-state tuition and scholarships for the public university. Other now going
but you know what? The courts have played an illegal alien. Have the right to get on the event.
think you.
Wow. Hate to break up the love fest here at the table at Shelley's Back Room, but we are live again from Shelley's Back Room in downtown Washington, D.C. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. We want to talk about in our last segment here, John Boehner.
Oh, my God. Place is on fire.
Wow. I'll go back to his old radio days. Al being the Emmy winning broadcaster that he is just giving a sound effect. Thank you. Not that we've needed it because we've had a full back room tonight. The last segment I'm going to talk about is that was crosshairs on you. I thought it was a good interview. We're talking about the elect Boehner and interviewed on this past Sunday. The one word that keeps getting floated around in his interview is emotional. It was very emotional. Bob, you probably know the speaker-elect as good as anybody here at the table. He is a self-proclaimed emotional human being. The man is very emotional. So have you known him to cry or be emotional like that on a routine basis? Or?
I know this. If you know his background, you know what he's dealing with. and what he has to deal with. Understand that, that John is one of 12 children. He's the eldest. When you start talking about responsibilities and what you have to deal with and what other people have to deal with,
and
I don't see that as weakness.
And your
family. I see that as an honest statement.
He cries because he loses a bill.
I would agree with you.
Yeah. If he cries over something that truly emotional.
You was calling him a weakness. Well, I gotta chime in on this one. And and usually as a moderator, I try not to, but I got to tell you something. I couldn't agree with Bob more. I couldn't agree with Al more. Even Frank and I agree on this. I got to tell you something. You know, I come from a very Italian, Scottish family from the Northeast. We were much like Speaker Boehner, where our emotions are on our sleeves. I think part of the disconnect that has happened inside the Beltway with the rest of America is the fact that they feel that there's no connection to their emotions. There's no connection to their real feelings, that they are not human. And the fact that Speaker Boehner, and after seeing that interview with Leslie Stahl, people rallying around Speaker Boehner as being a real human being, somebody with an emotional investment in him, I don't see how we're ever going to be able to bring outside the Beltway with the general electorate. It just does not make sense to me.
Justin, I agree with you.
Education of someone that's very cool, calculating, Washington insider. You never really saw personal life until very recently. And I think that's very, very
good.
It's not that anyone cares. That's the issue. So much. Every time you
I can't believe. I see what you're saying, but the reality is, you know, if he does show at little piece of legislation that comes out, then in fact he'll be viewed as weak. But the fact that somebody, I mean, the criticism of the Obama administration and the criticism of Obama is the whole idea of Captain Cool. Captain Cool has no emotional connection. He's thinking about it academically and strictly sliver evil.
Community organizing.
Well, I mean, but the reality still dictates is that, you know, if the general electorate, in my opinion, if the general electorate saw somebody inside Washington as being a real human with real emotions, real feelings, I think you'll see more people in the general electorate outside wanting to be more involved, wanting to be more inclusive, wanting to be more supportive of actually what's going on here. This actually, I think, might even spur people to get involved and get active in their politics, saying, hey, if somebody with his emotions can be the Speaker of the House, why can't I get involved in my own political backyard? Bob.
You don't get to be the minority leader or the Speaker if you're a wimp. John Boehner has taken a lot of tough decisions in the last few weeks as he reorganized the House of Representatives. He has said to some senior members, you're not going to be chairman of committees, which is very unusual.
And to some of his friends, he said that, too.
Absolutely. He has said the budgets of the entire, every office in the House of Representatives, the members' office, the committee's offices, the leadership's offices, 5%. He is a serious-minded guy, and he'll be tough as nails, as he always has been, with respect to the legislative responsibilities.
And earlier in his career, he got unceremoniously demoted out of Republican leadership.
Right.
And instead of going home with his tail between his legs, he went back as chairman of the Education Committee, helped pass President Bush's
No Child
Left Behind, and rebuilt himself. Now that shows guts. Whether he shows some tears over something else, I think shows very little about his character.
Well,
the fact that Pelosi made a joke about it shows her character.
It shows her bad.
Yes.
And I will say this. I think Obama and Pelosi do show emotion, but they show emotion the same way. I don't think that's appropriate either. So.
Well, I think, all in all, I honestly believe that the interview on 16 Minutes did more support Boehner than
I'd rather have the quote-unquote emotional chosen the
when you look at the conversation we're having as a result of gain or crying, it's not the same conversation that we've had, as someone mentioned earlier, with the conversation where, while there are the pros and cons about weakness, this is a much larger conversation. People aren't just coming out and talking for hours and talking about
wow, that's a close out that segment. We're coming to the last 10 minutes of the show, and as we do every week, until the blessing of Prince Matthew, the something I know. With our segment of Tell Me a Story. Now, get into this. I have to say this thing. On the show, we're back live. We are back live in Shelley's Back Room. In our last 6 minutes, I am praising Bob Hines for allowing backroom politics to be on the bleeding edge of news in this town. Bob, you call the governing committee inside the GOP. We're going to make some tough decisions that certain senior members of the leadership are not going to be senior membership leader in the party. Bob, thank you for legitimacy back in politics. Wow, and I read CNN in the smoke-encrusted nerve center of backroom politics. We've got CNN on the back screen here. And now Jack Cafferty, who arguably after he left, is putting the weeper of the house. Well,
if they have most of what I, you know, I guess you
want to
and it would all do is to my dear friend Al Swift, and I don't think this is both him. So the Democrats, we for the other.
Well, as long as he pushes down policy through the House, that's all that's really good.
Now you have the final say in this.
I have to say this. Bob, that is the most partisan thing I've ever heard you say.
Wow.
And I reserve the right for a major partisan statement at some future program.
You do.
You're an absolute right, my friend.
Now it's around the table. Al, tell me a story.
Oh, I get it. Wouldn't buy the two Irishmen went to the bar.
No.
Last week, and I don't know whether I've said this before, but an unwritten story is that the younger Democratic members that have come in the last 15 years are most of them are fiscal conservatives.
Really?
And they're social liberals. But they are very concerned about the deficit, and I think it's one of the reasons that there's a chance that we will be able to get some cuts on the Democratic side of things, because these are guys who just hate borrowing money from China, so that we can go off and fight somebody else's wars.
Is that going to help the majority in the House?
I think it will help the president deal with the most intractable problem that we have had, and that no president yet has been able to solve.
Wow, Bob, tell me a story. It's going to be hard to top last week, but tell me a story.
The House of Representatives is going to be probably each week. Having before them legislation will reduce spending in one way or another. I think Speaker Boehner and the leadership in the Republican Party are going to be continually coming to the floor with, you know, getting votes to get effect. These are not going to be great zillion dollars, you know, savings, but he is going to find savings. His leadership people, his committee chairman, find savings in programs they are in charge of, and they are going to be bringing to the floor on a weekly basis ways to save money.
Ralph, tell me a story.
Okay. I think another bomb may go off in the Middle East. The assassination of President Rafiq Hariri now looks like it may be tied to members of Iran's Revolutionary Guard.
Really? Wow. We may actually have another breaking news story here.
Yeah, quick, check Politico.
Yeah, check Politico. They may be reporting that last week. Oh, my God, that's going to be hard to beat.
Pelosi is still a
Oh, come on, Frank.
I have to, man. She lowers herself to that meeting level.
Go ahead, Al.
The
first member of society of which this is a part is dedicated to having civil discourse. And you have heard me say many critical things of Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, thank you.
But you have never heard me say anything like that about Newt Gingrich, for example. I wouldn't say it about John Boehner, but I haven't said it about
him. No, I haven't.
I haven't on the air.
Right. You know, correct.
I apologize to those fans of Pelosi.
Well,
Pelosi's a much more polarizing character than
No question.
I think saying she is a polarizing character is perfectly legitimate.
Perfectly legitimate.
I apologize.
Perry is the newest member of our roundtable. Tell me a story.
You know, I got to continue with what was just brought up. I think that there's a way for us to talk about what's going on now and what's going to change in a couple months without doing what happened, four or five years ago now, where a man walks up to a sitting vice president on the street and says, "Go F yourself, Mr. Cheney." There's better ways to do it, and I'm
point.
Or the vice president saying,
"Chandler,
on the floor, tell us, go F yourself."
Sure. Chandler, tell us the story.
I really want to see how many things Assange is going to get hit with and how many different trains, because I think people got informed.
That's a very valid point.
Michael Moore has agreed to pay $10,000 of his bail, and Michael Moore, being the true douche hole of the week, also paid for part of the private attorney fund.
2 minutes left. Ray, tell me a story.
Chandler and I are actually hoping to visit private first class Manning and waterboard the hell out of him.
Wow. Okay.
Private first class Manning being the guy who actually released all the documents.
I've been redeemed.
No, just joined.
No.
You know, Miss Pelosi is not my favorite politician either, but she has.
But she's dogmatic.
She is dogmatic, as many people are. But as a Republican, I would say, in one sense, she is the gift that gives on giving.
Yes.
Because it is true.
Biden is my gift
it
that keeps
is true
on giving.
That
well,
yeah,
she's real quick. Right. Well, we're gonna let that last word. Bob, I want to take that up next week's show. We're here live from Chili's back room. I want to thank our usual round of people: Congressman Al, the Honorable Bob Swift, Ralph, Frank the Bodyguard. Would I say nice to Bob Swift again? Sweet mother of God. Bob Hines, Al Swift, Frank the Bodyguard, I am your moderator, JC. We're putting this show back. Well, thank you. Next day, live from Shelley's Backroom. This is Backroom Politics live on Blog Talk.